Welcome to Geopolitical Horizons, the podcast of thegeopolitics.com. It was 2 years ago on August the 15th when the Afghan people prevailed against another empire as the US got up and left the mountainous country after a disastrous two-decade occupation. The Taliban have been busy since then trying to rule over the nation and trying to solve the myriad of challenges. Here to discuss where Afghanistan is on its second anniversary after the US departure is Geopolity founder Adnan Khan. How are you keeping, Adnan?
I'm good, Yusuf. I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Now, Adnan, it's been 2 years since the Taliban took over on 15th of August. How would you say they have fared since then?
Okay, so Yusuf, the Taliban have been very busy. To be honest, they've actually been busy even for the period they were out of government. I think the context here is important. The Taliban took over after a disastrous occupation, two-decade occupation by America. An occupation that saw them support all sorts of funny characters, warlords in Afghanistan. So they took over a country that really was rock bottom. So it was always going to be a significant challenge. They were going to face multiple challenges, and the situation wasn't helped by the way the US and the Western coalition left. And many of the things they've done subsequent to that haven't actually helped. So the Taliban's main focus has really been internal. Naturally, if you take over a country, if you undertake a revolution, then you want to stabilize the domestic situation. So the Taliban very quickly, within a few days, had a press conference where they showed the world the face of the Taliban. They had a spokesman, he spoke English, and very quickly a structure, governance structure emerged, which consists all of Taliban members. The Taliban currently have an acting prime minister. He has two deputy prime ministers. They have various departments. They have a defense minister. They have an interior minister. They have a foreign minister. The Amir Hebatullah Akhundzada, he hasn't taken an official position in this government. They call this government a temporary government. However, he remains the Amir of the actual party. So again, all these positions were very, very public, very open. Nothing's hidden at all. Obviously, the key challenges were always going to be, Yusuf, economy and security. So very quickly, Taliban members took hold of the country's security. They ensured that they had control over many of the key highways. And what's actually happened then, which has actually been proven by many people who have gone to Afghanistan, is the security situation actually has improved now. The road stops, the bombings, and even road repairs, they've actually taken place. The old regime has more or less gone. Taliban have actually been in talks with people like Hamid Karzai, and many of the old regime as well. But the Taliban have got the confidence of the people for the moment because they fought a two-decade insurgency against foreign occupation and they eventually got rid of them. So despite many of the challenges the Taliban are facing and they probably will continue to face, for the moment, they've still got the confidence of the people. Now, obviously, Yusuf, if you know, things get worse or they deteriorate, that's not necessarily going to last. But 2 years on, the bloodbath that everybody expected, the reprisals everybody expected, the Northern Alliance government that was overthrown, them causing tension, none of that has actually happened. In fact, the most shocking thing for everybody is the fact that there's been that much stability, really, after such a long period of warfare in this country.
So I know we're not seeing a bloodbath. I know we're not really seeing much trouble from Afghanistan. But one thing we do always hear about is things like the banning of education for girls, the human rights issues. These things are constantly come up on the Western media. Now, is this really happening? How do we weigh this up?
Okay, so we need to put this question and perspective into context, Yusuf. And this is the perspective many Westerners come from. When they look at Afghanistan, they can't see beyond girls' education. And all they're looking at is a pair of glasses and all they see is human rights. Now, I mentioned before, Yusuf, we've got to take into account this country has been at war for the best part of 40, 50 years. And the last decade, the American occupation and their cronies, they literally pushed the country to rock bottom. This is the situation the Taliban emerged in. What the narrative that seems to come from the West is things were so great for the last 20 years. America did a really good job. You just had a corrupt government, and eventually America couldn't remain there forever, so they cut a deal with the Taliban. That's the narrative they present. What they don't show is it was a complete failure by America for 20 years, and this has been proven by congressional hearings and documentation by American institutions. The people America worked with, they were corrupt. They looted the country. And obviously, that's not how it was reported at the time, because the last thing America wanted to report was this occupation is really bad. So this was the mess the Taliban had inherited. So their priority has been the economy and security, not education. And this human rights discussion, the human rights were not there if you ask the Afghan people, even during the 20-year occupation by America. And you'll hear of many, many places where American troops will do night raids, where people were arrested, people were killed. The difference here is the last 20 years, effectively the Nur Alliance, these are people from the north of the country, they were in power. The Taliban and the Pashtun, they largely come from the south of the country. So because the northern element of the country was in power, they like to talk about human rights and things like that. Obviously, the Taliban's first priority at the moment is to sort the economy out. It's to bring security. It's to make it safe for people to travel. It's to make it safe for girls to even get to school, because nobody talks about kidnapping, which has been an ongoing issue in Afghanistan for decades. So yes, the West is trying to present it as a very bleak picture, and they would, because the problem Afghanistan has today was the creation of America's occupation. It was American and foreign occupation that created most of the problem, and the Taliban has inherited these. So naturally, what the media is saying is the Taliban are the problem, and because they're not giving you human rights and because they're not giving education to girls, things are really, really bad. Even if Taliban abide by human rights, which itself is a loaded term, even if every girl went to school, there are still millions of other issues in this country. And in fact, if they did these two things, the West would then complain about other elements in the country. So it's a very Western way to look at this, because they're not seeing human rights, and because girls aren't going to school or they've been banned, then things must be really, really bad. These are not even the concerns of most Afghan people. Education is the last thing on their mind when families aren't fed. Education is the last thing on people's mind when there's no security in the country. So this is a very Western way of actually looking at things. I'm not trying to say it's a rosy picture. You know, a utopia has been created in Afghanistan and things are all great. However, they're not as bad as is being made out in the West.
Okay, I get that, Adnan. I follow you there. But what is the real reason the Taliban has banned girls from going to school?
So girls have been stopped from going to school, but again, I think we need to understand the broader picture here. Now, firstly, you're right, education for some reason seems to be gaining most of Western media attention, even though there's so many things, other things, probably of more critical nature going on. So when the Taliban took over, Yusuf, 15th August 2021, they actually said that they committed to protecting girls, women's rights within the framework of the Sharia. And in the immediate aftermath of the takeover, the Taliban leaders even called on female government employees to return to their posts as long as they wear hijab. And shortly after this, the Taliban actually told women to stay at home until they secured things. But then eventually they committed that they will reopen schools, because now they believe, so after a few months, they believe they have security. So I think they took over in August. Apparently by October, schools were supposed to open. We're talking here about secondary school kids and above. We're not talking about primary school kids. What, however, happened was on the day schools were supposed to open, the Taliban leader, the Amir, Mullah Akhundzada, he actually did a U-turn. He actually said no. And this was actually shocking even to the government in Kabul. And the Kabul government is the public face of Afghanistan government at the moment. So what that showed you, there were some differences amongst them. Now, the argument the Taliban leader presented is a couple of things. He first said that at the moment, we don't have the funding for coaches, for security, for school uniforms. So he said we need more time. So it wasn't necessarily a U-turn, but some economic reasons as well. The other thing is that, look, education is looked upon very differently in Afghanistan compared to other countries. In a country like Afghanistan, formal education outside the madrasa system is less than 100 years old. And if you look at the history of Afghanistan, Yusuf, you will see that education has been politically used by different factions throughout its modern history. So there are different views on education. So in a country which is largely rural, the role of women is largely in the home, around the farm. So education has historically been secondary. That's the first. The second issue is the Taliban, actually, their scholars accept to live in the modern day, to raise children, you need to learn not just the madrasa system, the Islamic subject. You also need to learn the worldly subjects like science, these sort of things. So they actually are not against education. They actually are for it. They feel women actually do need education. You need it in a normal country. That doesn't necessarily mean every Taliban member agrees with that. There are many members in the Taliban, and there are many people in wider Afghan society that feel a girl's role is at home. A girl's role is largely at home or on the around the home in terms of the farm and the children. So there's a broader issue here, which is security, and that there are differences even within Afghanistan. What's going on here, Yusuf, is all the blame is being put on the Taliban. They've just stopped and they're not letting women have a fundamental right, right? The education system wasn't actually any better for the last 20 years in this country. In fact, the World Bank actually gave very negative reviews of the state of education in Afghanistan during the American occupation. Yeah, so there's a broader subject. So yes, they have, the Taliban have not reopened secondary schools and above, and they are saying because of security and economic reasons, they need to put these in place first.
Now, if we move on to the economy, Afghanistan is in quite a difficult position. I mean, you've got US sanctions, their foreign assets are frozen, and the central bank seizures are still in place. How are they coping?
So, Yusuf, the Taliban inherited an economy that was really built upon a pack of cards that was waiting to collapse. And when America abandoned Afghanistan, it did collapse. So the economic crisis and challenges the Taliban are facing is due to the two-decade occupation, where a rump government was set up to serve the US agenda. So when the US got up and left, it took its contractors and officials with her, and the sandcastle that she'd built in Afghanistan all collapsed. This is what the Taliban inherited. Then the US imposed sanctions and restrictions on Afghanistan. The formal banking system that did exist left with America as well, which meant the US withdrew much of Afghanistan's money. And obviously the most famous example really is the US freezing of Afghan central bank funds. So the Afghan central bank funds are actually in America. They're actually in the Federal Reserve. They're not actually in Afghanistan. So it's not surprising that there's going to be an economic crisis in this country when America is effectively strangling the country. So what America seems to be doing is, unless they see progress on the human rights, girls' education side, unless they don't see concessions by Afghanistan, unless they don't see Taliban compromise, they're not going to give this actually up. Despite that, Yusuf, Taliban have made some headway in terms of reconstruction. They've repaired some of the dams, and they've actually agreed quite a few trade deals with some surrounding countries, such as Uzbekistan, such as China. So they're trying to make headway. I think the important thing also is, Yusuf, that most Afghans live in rural Afghanistan. So they live on self-sufficient farms, not necessarily linked into the urban areas. So for most people, what goes on in urban Afghanistan, in terms of the governance and economy, they're actually in a parallel economy, which is largely in the rural areas. So if Afghanistan doesn't have any money, that doesn't necessarily mean everyone's poor. If Afghanistan has loads of money, that doesn't necessarily mean everyone's rich. Because we're looking at this from a very Western perspective, which is everything centrally driven. You have a central bank, you have economic policies, and these permeate every area of a country. Afghanistan is not a country like that. In fact, Afghanistan, you could argue, is many countries. The north and the south are worlds apart. So definitely Afghanistan is facing economic issues, but the Taliban actually have been talking to everybody around them. They've been talking to the countries in Central Asia about water, about energy. They've actually made a deal over a copper mine and a couple of dams with China as well. The West at the moment seem to be the only problem, because they don't want to deal with Afghanistan until they see the Taliban undertake reforms. So definitely, I don't want anyone to get this image that it's a complete dark picture. Afghanistan is about to collapse. On the other hand, this isn't some utopia. Afghanistan is not a China where everything's now people are driving Ferraris and people are enjoying luxuries.
Now, you're saying that Afghanistan, it seems like it's fairly stable, but what can you explain a little bit more about that? What is the security situation like in Afghanistan?
Well, Yusuf, British MP Tobias Elwood, he heads the UK Parliament's Defence Committee, he's the chairman. He recently returned from Afghanistan and he did a video, which you can find on Twitter. And he actually said that his experience of Afghanistan, he just returned a week and a half ago, was that the country has been completely transformed under the Taliban. He actually, the MP actually said that we need to accept the Taliban has succeeded, and Afghanistan's achieved more in 2 years of Taliban rule than the failed 20 years under Western rule. This is coming from a British MP himself. He said that security is vastly improved, people are free to travel, and widespread corruption that had dominated Afghanistan has all but disappeared. He also said that the dreaded black market and opium trade that blighted the Afghan economy seems to have also gone as well. So he actually believes that the war-torn country has not experienced peace like this since the 1970s. And you can watch his video. He said he witnessed congested streets with bustling life. You know, everyone's going about their business, free from infinite checkpoints and the perpetual fear of violence. And he said the Taliban authorities are no more visible than the police are in London. He felt that in the heart of the Helmand province, where the British army was stationed, they invested a lot of blood and treasure in the past. And he said the Taliban has effectively created a miniature solar panel landscape, something that the British couldn't do for two decades. So the British MP actually believes that the West errors for two decades have now been corrected by the Taliban. And actually, he feels that the UK actually needs to engage with the Taliban because they're actually taking care of the needs of the people. So he obviously got criticized for saying positive things. So I think he took his video down in the end, although it's still up. Some people managed to record it. But that was quite interesting. This is from a British MP who'd been there before. So he felt these security situations improved. And what we also find, Yusuf, is once the Taliban settled into power, there wasn't the sectarian or ethnic massacre that the West claimed would take place. That hasn't happened at all. The prediction of mass killings hasn't actually turned out like that. In fact, you find, Yusuf, that there was a general amnesty for all the opponents of the Taliban, big or small. This even included all those who took up arms, people who were with ISIS, and the resistance from the northern areas. So Graham Smith, he's a senior consultant for the International Crisis Group, he actually said that the Taliban rule, this round of Taliban's rule, probably ranks as the most peaceful period that Afghanistan has enjoyed in over four decades. So what you find, Yusuf, and even sitting from here in the UK, is it doesn't seem people are dying on the streets every day because of violence. In fact, I read this really funny article this week on Politico. The Politico journalist went to Afghanistan and she interviewed four or five different Afghan commanders who were in different layers of the government. And they actually said that the biggest challenge they've got is they're now doing office jobs because they've got to run the government. So they've transitioned from being a guerrilla to now being an administrator. And the challenges they face are they get really bored replying to emails and phone calls. And in fact, the biggest challenge one of them said is the fact that he has to be in at 8 o'clock in the morning every day, because now they're running the government, whilst before he was obviously on the fields all the time. So this is what's being said about the security situation, very different to the two-decade occupation. Obviously, the Western media are trying to create this image that there's still an ISIS threat, and they keep trying to talk up that the Taliban will massacre the opposition. But 2 years down the line, Yusuf, here we are. None of that has actually materialized.
What about externally, Adnan? So how's Taliban's relationship been with countries surrounding it? What's their foreign policy like?
So Yusuf, the Taliban have actually been talking to everybody around them. They obviously realized their previous, when they were in power from 1996 onwards, their relationship was really only with Saudi Arabia and Pakistan. This time around, they've learned their lesson that firstly, they can't be dependent on these two countries. So they've actually been talking to everybody. So they've been talking to China. China obviously shares a border with Afghanistan. And China's obviously worried that Uyghur citizens from China may go to Afghanistan, take up arms, things like that. So actually what you find, China has been the country that's visited Afghanistan most has actually been China. China's actually agreed to a number of mining projects as well for Afghanistan. So you find that with China, they've got a very good working relationship, and that will probably continue. The Taliban have been talking to Moscow, considered unthinkable many, many years ago. The Taliban are now talking to Moscow. In fact, now Taliban members regularly travel to Moscow to meet the regime there. And Russian officials regularly travel to the Taliban as well. Obviously, because Afghanistan is linked to Central Asia, what happens in Afghanistan will impact Central Asia. And Central Asia is considered the underbelly of Russia. So there's talks going on there as well. With Iran, the Taliban have just actually signed a treaty of neighborliness and friendliness. Obviously, for Iran, it's important that the bit of Iran that borders Afghanistan, they want that border secure. The Taliban wants that as well, so they are talking with each other. On the Pakistan side, it's been quite interesting. There's actually been some tensions as well. But what you find is since the Taliban have come into power, really all the focus has been on the Taliban. To get the Taliban back into power, to negotiate, America needed Pakistan. Pakistan did a lot of the organizing. since the Taliban have come to power, the roles have actually changed a bit. So what you find, the Taliban have been more busy talking to other countries because with Pakistan, they have a long historical relationship. Now, Central Asia is where there's been some problems. So Uzbekistan, Taliban have a good relationship, but you find with Tajikistan and Turkmenistan, they've had some issues. And that's largely because the Northern Alliance, they are linked to many of the groups and the regimes there. Aside from that, they've been talking to everybody else. So Indian officials have now visited Afghanistan. They talked to them. And one commander of the Taliban even said they're up for talking to Israel. Nothing's been said after his statement, but that's the foreign policy of Afghanistan. This time around, they're making sure they're not isolated. They're not dependent upon one or two regional or Muslim governments. Now the Taliban are basically talking to everybody.
If we focus on Pakistan specifically, because obviously it's a neighboring country, they've had very close ties in the past, but there seems to have been a little bit of tension between the Taliban and Pakistan earlier this year. So I know the Pakistan's military, they even launched strikes on targets on the border areas. And where does Tariq-e-Taliban come into all this?
Okay, so yes, the Tariq-e-Taliban is actually the problem between the Taliban in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Now, the difference between the two groups is the Taliban, if we view them as the government in Afghanistan, which they are, and it's a movement that has always been part of Afghanistan only. The Tariq-e-Taliban emerged from the tribal areas. They fought with the people that make up the Taliban against the Soviet occupation back in the day and the American occupation. Where the Tariq-e-Taliban came about is when Pakistan started launching operations in the tribal areas during America's two-decade occupation. When they started doing this, the villages and the people that lived in the tribal areas, they took up arms against the Pakistan government because these people were being attacked because they were supporting the jihad in Afghanistan against the American occupation. So since then, the Tariq-e-Taliban emerged and they've effectively been fighting the Pakistan government because they believe the Pakistan government is attacking them because America's ordered them to do it and they're in a war with them. So what's actually happened is there've been a number of operations in the northern areas. And every operation is then followed by a peace deal, which eventually Pakistan then breaks. As a result, the Tariq-e-Taliban realized you can't trust Pakistan. Now, what's happened is when the Taliban took over 2 years ago, Pakistan was a bit worried. Pakistan got worried, the military that is, that would the Afghan Taliban give a safe haven to the Tariq-e-Taliban? What the Taliban have been trying to do is they've been trying to intermediate between these two parties. They want to see a settlement to the dispute. And obviously the Taliban in Afghanistan realized this could spill over into Afghanistan. So what actually happened was Pakistan's army tried to push the hand of the Afghan Taliban by launching some strikes in villages in the northern areas. And they were arguing that Afghan Taliban are not doing enough. It's now quieting down because the Afghan Taliban are actually seriously pursuing peace talks between representatives of the Pakistani army and the Tariq-e-Taliban. So obviously, all of this Yusuf has the potential to really blow up into something big. The fact that the Pakistani army launched strikes in the areas shows you that things aren't really settled there. Probably the other problem is Pakistan, it seems, especially the ISI, the Secret Service, they don't necessarily have control over a lot of the Taliban. They have control over the Taliban due to some of the leaders, like Sirajuddin Haqqani, who's the interior minister. But Mullah Yaqub, who's the son of Mullah Muhammad Omar, the founder of Afghanistan, he's a minister, and he's actually been very critical of Pakistan overall. So I think Pakistan is worried that now that the Taliban are in government, they may not have control over many elements of the Taliban. And this is leading to tension, and this is really what led to the Tariq-e-Taliban trying to... this is what led to the strikes on the Tariq-e-Taliban. So you've got a bit of a messy picture there, and all of this has the potential to really blow up.
Final question for you, Adnan. Obviously, the Taliban, they are seen as an Islamic governance. How is this so-called Islamic governance model, how is it faring?
Okay, Yusuf. So the leaders of the Taliban have actually been or gone to great pains to spread a very different message from when they were last in power. When they were in power 20 odd years ago, as far as they consider, great tragedy took place, they were overthrown. And there seemed to be an acceptance by many Taliban members that they can't do what they did 20 years ago. So you find that immediately the Taliban, when they came to power, they declared a general amnesty for everyone. And what you find is very quickly, they openly declared their government, who the politicians are and things like that. What you do find is that's fine on paper. In practice, things are not as black and white. So we've seen, for example, on the issue of education, there's been differences amongst them. But a couple of weeks ago, Sirajuddin Haqqani, who's the interior minister, he's the son of Jalaluddin Haqqani, of the Haqqani network, who Sirajuddin Haqqani is still on sanctions and terrorists around the world. And he actually criticized Habibullah Akhundzada, the leader of the Taliban, for being too controlling. And what we're finding, Yusuf, is you've got the government in Kabul. So this is the face of the government. These, most of these individuals were people who negotiated with America and the normalized government in Qatar. So Mullah Baradar is one of the guys there. And then you've got the leadership of the Taliban, the Amir, and all the committees around them in Kandahar, which is the heartland of the Taliban. And what you're finding is there's already a clear divide between the two. The Kabul government wants to create a good image. It wants to compromise. Whilst you're finding in Kandahar, there are many tribes who've got high expectations. So for example, I was reading that one of the tribes was saying that if we're going to open schools now, he saw education as westernization. And he said to Mullah Akhundzada in a meeting that we didn't fight America for 20 years in order to westernize our children. So clearly there's actually a divide. For the moment, the Taliban government seems to be operating where the Kabul government runs the country unless and until the Amir gives a decree or he says something which goes against the government, or he says something the government hasn't decided on yet, and then what he said is the decision that's actually being made. And we can see that this is already leading to tension within the group. I don't think it's at the point where there are differences within the group. The Taliban have a long history of loyalty and caring more for stability and structure than, you know, personal agendas by individuals. So we see in the West, for example, different politicians have their own agendas irrespective of where the country is. With the Taliban, we've never actually seen that. The final point on this, Yusuf, is the Taliban have not outlined how exactly the Islamic system will work or the details of the shape and structure yet. The government structure we have at the moment, and this is one of the arguments from some Taliban members, is how is it any different to the previous government? You have a prime minister, you have active prime minister, you have departments. How is it actually any different? And so far they're concerned, this is not what they fought for. But this government structure is apparently a temporary government. We haven't actually seen what the permanent structure is yet. And then secondly, look, the Taliban's view has always been, as long as the courts ruled by Sharia law, as long as they judge cases by Sharia law, then that is Islamic governance. Obviously, when we look at governance, we look at policy, you know, how you're dealing with judiciary, how you're dealing with health. On those areas, we've not seen any clear picture or any policy documents or anything like that yet. So how is the Islamic governance model faring? It's working. It's operational. What are the details? Where will it go? We don't know yet, but even the Taliban haven't mentioned that as well. So historically, when Westerners look at any theocratic system, they feel, how can you be so rigid and operate in the modern day? Well, for 2 years, the certainty of what the Taliban will do actually has created stability in the country. And this is one of the reasons why the Taliban even emerged in the country back in the 1990s. Because of their positions, which were rigid and fixed, that created certainty for the country. While for the last 20 years, what you saw was a regime that chopped and changed what they did. And a lot of it was based upon what personally benefited them. So their model is working at the moment. It's not necessarily in line with Western ideas of what a governance model is. Nevertheless, for Afghanistan, it's working. And for the moment, the people seem satisfied with the degree of stability and knowing what's coming from the center, rather than previously where things chop and change on a daily basis.
Thank you for your time today, Adnan. Definitely a lot to think about. If you want to learn more about the issues we've raised today, then check out our website. That's www.thegeopolity.com. You can also learn on many other issues by accessing our website. You'll find comprehensive insights, analysis, articles, and deep dives. I'm Yusuf. Thank you for listening.